and welcome to Adapt Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Claire O'Connell, and in this episode, we're talking about AI and bias.
From the Adapt Centre at Trinity College, this is Adapt Radio, presenting groundbreaking innovations, one conversation at a time.
It's one of the fundamental principles in computing science, garbage in, garbage out. And in the same way, the material that we use to train AI and machine learning has an enormous impact on what that technology does. Biased and racist and misogynistic material in, then you get that right back out again. At the Adapt Scientific Conference recently in Dublin City University, keynote speaker and Adapt researcher Dr. Abebe Birhane focused everyone's attention on this problem with some really eye-opening evidence from her own research. Abebe is currently a senior advisor in AI accountability at Mozilla Foundation, and she's an adjunct assistant professor in the School of Computer Science and Statistics at Trinity College Dublin. Abebe advises the Irish government and the UN on AI, and she's been listed in Time's Most Influential People in AI. Her research has drawn much attention to the issues of bias in AI training. She and colleagues have found deep and disturbing patterns in images used to train computer vision models, including images that discriminate against women and people of colour and that reinforce damaging stereotypes. Before Abebe went in to give her keynote speech at the Adapt conference, I caught up with her to find out about the shape of her talk.
Abebe, you are about to go in and give the keynote address. What are you going to be talking about?
I will first talk about the rise of generative AI, and then I'll move on to talk about how, as these models became ubiquitous, ethical considerations also have been at the forefront. You have concerns about existential risk or rogue AI. These are purely hypothetical, and there is no scientific or engineering grounds to them. So after I cleared that misunderstanding, then I'll move on to talk about the actual real concerns that are emanating from generative AI, you know, such as hallucination, the energy, massive energy consumption, training data that is often sourced in a borderline illegal way, but also the data itself tends to encode and exacerbate racial stereotypes. Then I'll talk about, you know, the AI hype, how we hear grand claims, but upon scrutiny, they don't really stand up to scrutiny. And then I'll conclude with, you know, a few recommendations.
Brilliant. I can't wait. We'll catch you on the way out.
Great. Thank you.
So Abebe went off to give her speech. And when I say she had the audience attention entirely focused from the get-go, I'm not joking. She began by talking about how the AI problems we're discussing today might never be problems at all.
Generative AI has been around for quite some time, but the introduction of DALL-E back in April 22 can be noted as one of the occasions or one of the landmarks where it's really generative AI really exploded into the public space. This is a little clip from MIT Tech Review where they had over a million users in just the span of just 3 months. And ChatGPT just followed in November 2022. I think that really just marked the introduction of generative AI into everyday use. And as you can see from this clip from Reuters reporting, it was supposedly the fastest growing consumer application in history, where they had over 100 million monthly active users, according to this report. Of course, you have to take these reports with a pinch of salt. And as generative AI really infiltrated or covered almost every part of social life, ethical concerns also started to emerge into the scene. But unfortunately, a lot of these ethical concerns are overhyped or misleading. For example, there has been a lot of coverage around the risk of extinction from AI. This kind of reporting assumes, or a lot of the underlying assumption that is, you know, AI is autonomous, it's going to be self-governing and so on, and it will eventually go rogue and it will lead to a human extinction. And unfortunately, notable AI researchers people often considered as godfathers of AI, like Geoffrey Hinton, have been really buying into this ungrounded hype, but also really spreading this entirely ungrounded and unfounded, purely hypothetical concerns. And unfortunately, even though a lot of these concerns about existential risk or AI going rogue, there's no foundation for them, even though these are not, again, grounded in scientific hypothesis or something that can be verified. These hypotheses start and then they spread through the AI research community. Journalists often pick these up without critical scrutiny. And eventually, these kind of hypothetical concerns reach, you know, regulators, policymakers, and unfortunately, policymakers then spend a lot of time, money, resources, and so on in these, unfortunately, a waste of time concerns. This is an example where last year's UK AI summit involved a lot of discussion around these kind of hypothetical risks around AI. So I'm presenting this just to clear the way, just to make it clear that a lot of these concerns, even though they are raised by high-profile AI researchers, they do have very little grounds, and most of the time, really no grounds. And Timnit Gebru and Emily Torres have written an excellent paper that actually dispels a lot of this hypothetical concern. I highly encourage you to go and read it. This existential risk is connected to this idea of building AGI and the idea of building utopia, which then has roots in ideologies such as physiognomy and debunked as pseudoscience ideologies. And they clearly spell out also not these hypothetical AI concerns, existential concerns, but how the very idea of this attempt to build AGI has neither scientific nor engineering principles. Again, a lot of it is just hype, marketing, and PR that is just really dominating the entire field. So now that we have said, you know, the concerns that we shouldn't spend our time on, I will go through a number of issues that are real, that are actually based on scientific evidence, based on evidence that we can scrutinize and based on testing. Again, the list that I'm going to go through is not an exhaustive list, but rather some of the major concerns that I thought are worthy of our consideration. So the first one is obviously hallucination. Large language models are known to produce, you know, statements, texts that seem factual, but in fact are just nonsensical or they just don't exist. This risk or this harm is not hypothetical because as these models are being integrated into various social spaces, the consequences that are catastrophic and dire. So just to give you an example, this is from an AI journalist, Rachel Mitz, where she reported on how the new WHO AI-powered chatbot is actually fabricating a list of clinics and fake addresses and phone numbers when it was queried around health-related questions. Again, this is a really recent paper that just came out, I think, a month or two ago, where they systematically examined some of these state-of-the-art generative models. And as you can see here, over 50% of them either produced, you know, factually incorrect summarization. They evaluated these models on a summarization task. They were feeding various books into these systems and they were evaluating the summarization, the output of that summarization. As I said, over 50% of them either are factually incorrect, but also a lot of the summarization consisted a lot of omission of important passages. There's plenty of work that is, again, doing all this kind of evaluation and testing. These are just examples. And another concerning issue is that these systems spread, these systems produce and spread misinformation and disinformation at a massive scale. again, there is plenty of research and research almost coming out almost every day that you can follow, that you can look at. One of the most notable audits come from the AI Democracy Projects, a project run by Alondra Nelson and Julia Agnew. She's an investigative journalist, again, one of the top experts, where they tested these five models, Claude, Gemini, GPT-4, Llama 2, and Mixtral, on US election information. And they got a bunch of experts that are experts in the US election information, and they were they evaluated how accurate, how harmful, how incomplete, and how biased the output from these models were. And as you can see, the results are really worrying. Over 50% of the output from these models was inaccurate, 40% harmful and incomplete, and so on. Another also major issue that is not really receiving enough attention, and it should really be at the forefront of all our minds, is the fact that training these systems requires massive amounts of energy. Even cooling down the data centers requires massive gallons of water. And here is another summary from The Atlantic, where they kind of predicted AI servers' electricity demand could grow in order of 100 terawatts per year, which is about as much as the entire annual consumption of Argentina or Sweden. And this is the centralization of power in the hands of the few, is where I did a lot of research myself and also with colleagues. People like to, you know, often claim, a lot of the claims around AI are made without actual, you know, evidence. But one of the claims we hear again and again is that AI in general, and generative models in particular, democratize access, you know, knowledge production, productivity, and so on. But in reality, there is only a handful of big companies that are producing and selling these systems. And in reality, whether it's in research or in application, what we find, the trend, the recurring theme, is that these systems actually widen the divide. Just a few of them are getting at the very top and getting richer, while inequality and injustice is being widened, both through these systems and through the production of these systems. So one of the concrete ways we investigated how not just generative systems, but AI in general, is a means to centralize power in the hands of the few is by looking at 100 most influential AI papers from two of the top conferences, ICM and NeurIPS. We did a lot of stuff on that, but I will only present just one of the findings. So what we did was, as well as kind of systematically investigating what are the values of the field itself, because these are notable papers that really are shaping the direction of the field. So their claims do tell us a lot about the field as a whole. So one of the things we did was analyze the affiliation of these authors, of these most influential paper authors, but also look at the funding sources of these researchers. And we looked at the data over 10 years. So as you can see here, back in 2008 and 2009, there was a lot of diversity in terms of the publication of the most influential papers. Researchers from all kinds of institutions and organizations, including the Global South, were amongst the papers that made it into the most influential 100 papers. So over 77% of the papers back in 2008-2009 have no corporate affiliation or no funding from big tech. But come to 2008 and 2009, you will see that figure reduced from 77% to 28%. And in 2008 and 2009, only 11% of the most influential papers were either authored by big tech corporation authors or had funding from big tech. But that number has grown almost five times, from 11% to 58%. So from this research, we can infer that any model work, any model building, any AI work, even evaluation work, audit work that we are doing requires massive compute power. So it means that only organizations and tech corporations and institutions that do have, you know, the compute power that can compete are really dominating the field, which means their values, their interests is, you know, shaping the field as opposed to, you know, a diverse set of values. Another concern, again, this is something I have spent a lot of time investigating, is data set itself. I have written a number of papers on this, but this time I will only focus on two issues regarding data set. The first one is the way the data is sourced itself. It's sourced without awareness of the individuals, without consent of the individuals. And some of you might be aware with the ongoing lawsuits or debates around how artists are being organized and artists are being put at a disadvantage because their work is basically powering, or their work is basically the backbone of generative systems, whether it's language or images. So the first is some people have called it data theft, this sourcing of data in a borderline illegal way. And the second is the data itself. Myself and my colleagues have spent, as I said, quite a lot of time sifting through the training data itself. And there are numerous issues from, you know, copyright ranging to stereotypes or kind of the kind of representation that adhere to, societally held notions that adhere to racism, sexism, and so on. And to give you one example, this was work done back in 2020, 2021, where we looked at MIT's 80 million tiny images. This was a data set that was used to train vision models for over 10 years, maybe about 14 years before our own investigation. We were actually the first to investigate, to audit it. And to be clear, people haven't been paying attention to data. Until very recently, it was just a handful of us that have been really shouting, you know, data is the backbone, data is really important, and we should actually be looking at, you know, the content of itself, the content of the data itself. And as you can see here, we found several thousands of images labeled with the N word, the C word, the W word, and numerous other racist, sexist, and stereotyping labels. And to give you another brief example on how these data sets tend to encode and exacerbate societally held negative stereotypes. This is from an audit of the Lion dataset. The Lion dataset, multimodal dataset, came into the scene early 2022, I think, and our audit was, this paper was produced just a couple of months after the data was released. This is just a snapshot of the portal itself. This is the first set of images when you query the data portal with African and compare it with European. While, you know, African images, while the African culture and continent is represented in a really cliched negative stereotype way where, you know, as if people are just, you know, walking around partially dressed with face paints and so on. Whereas on the other hand, Europe is represented in a way with just maps and flags with very little, you know, negative stereotypes. And another audit we did very recently is in the previous research I presented on where we investigated the centralization of power by looking at affiliations and funding sources of authors. We also looked at what are the values, what are the top values of the field, what does the field care about? And it turns out people really care about, you know, generalization, scaling up, novelty, and so on, just the you know, the usual suspects, what you would expect. And you could almost do a thorough research in each of those keywords, and you will find a lot of nuggets. But one of the things we followed up is, again, scale is one of the top valued attributes in machine learning. And again, there is a general conception, or rather understanding within machine learning. This conception is often untested, just like many ideas within machine learning and AI. And one of these untested conceptions is that scale balances the good and the bad. Scale removes noise. If you scale up, you know, a lot of your problems will kind of balance out and you will end up with a data set that's kind of more or less close to the ground truth. And that's what we exactly tested by looking at if scaling a data set does actually, in fact, balance things out, and does it, remove a lot of undesirable content or balance out undesirable representation of, identities, cultures, and so on in the data set. And what we did was we measured, or rather we quantified hateful content, or rather we looked at how hateful content, whether it remains the same or whether it balances out or whether it actually increases as the scale increases. So we compared two data sets within the Lion family. The Lion data set is one of the few open source data sets, as most of you know. Data sets are rarely open sourced. These big corporations rarely reveal, never mind the data set itself. They don't even reveal, how it's sourced, what's in it, and so on. So the Lion data set has been serving the research community as a great source. So what we did was we compared the amount of hateful content in the Lion 400 data set, 400 million, it's a data set containing 400 tokens of image and text. It's a multimodal data set. We compared that with Lion 2 billion. This is a 2 billion data set that again contains image and text pairs. And we extracted the text from this multimodal data set and we passed it through this NLP tool called Sentimento. As you can see here, it kind of gives you, it takes every sentence, it gives you a rating of how hateful, targeted, or aggressive that text is. Again, you can read the entire paper, but here is a very brief summary of the results. As data set scale goes up, things don't really balance out. The good and the bad don't cancel out, and hateful content doesn't really increase. Rather, we found that it increases, both hateful, targeted, and aggressive content increases, and hateful in a very dramatic way. So all this is to say that, to point out the numerous issues that we have to deal with in training data sets that are used in these models. As I said, these data sets, because they are sourced from the World Wide Web, often through the common crawl dump, they inherently encode and represent, society's ugliness and, historical discrimination and so on. One thing that has been, again, extremely investigated, especially within the audit space, is how stereotypical representation from these data sets necessarily impacts model performance or model output. This is just back in 2020 when DALL-E was just after released. As you can see, models do inherit problems from data sets and models do reflect stereotypical representations. And as you can see here, the first set of images is for emotional otter. As you can see, the model gives you, images of women looking emotional and so on. Compare that with intellectual otter. Intellectual man is represented as intellectual in this case. And this is a Stable Diffusion back in April. And so many people also tried the model using the exact prompt, and the results are similar. So the first one is African people at work, and the second one, European people at work. Again, the African continent and the African identity and culture is represented in a degrading negative stereotype way. And when you compare that with a European, again, pictures speak louder than words. This was a reporting from NPR. By the way, journalists do some of the most amazing investigative audits of models and data sets. a lot of the groundbreaking work comes from investigative journalists. If you remember the COMPASS study back in 2026, where they looked at recidivism algorithms, that was done by a ProPublica journalist. So this was NPR journalists, again, testing Midjourney. They tried to get the model to produce a black doctor treating white children. And the model just refused to produce that, most likely because it hasn't really seen so many examples of black doctor treating white children, I guess. And as I've been saying, a lot of the problems with data sets necessarily translate, necessarily have a downstream impact on models. This is another investigation from Washington Post journalist, the first image, Toys in Iraq, attractive people, again, attractive people here. The model often, this is a stable diffusion, by the way, gives you, you know, white or mostly white women with light skin and Muslim people, again, adhering to stereotypes, and a portrait photo of a person at a social service. It mostly produced images of people of color. And some of the arguments have been that, you know, so this is reality. So the model is just reflecting what's reality. But in fact, a lot of what's considered as reality or ground truths is not actually accurate. So one of the examples here is that in this Washington Post report, they investigated further how accurate these stereotypes that the models are producing are. So as you can see here in 2020, 60% of the food stamp recipients were white and only 27% were black. So this is according to a census data. So this is the reality. This is accurate representation. Whereas the models are producing mostly black people and people of color as a portrait of a photo receiving social service benefits. So the point I want to make here is that these stereotypes are far from accurate. We also have another paper that was just accepted, in fact, that I haven't included here, where we also evaluated 14 models, again, to measure scale, model architecture, and their impact in a prediction and classification task. Out of the images, the prompt images, we used prompt images that with four ethnicities, black, white, Latino, and Asian, with two genders, black and white. And the idea is to feed these models. These are extremely controlled images from a Chicago Fish dataset, which is an academic dataset that's used for kind of research purposes. And when we fed these images to these various models, you know, instructing these models to classify according to the eight classes that we provided, seven of the classes were, this is a replication of OpenAI's experiment back in 2022, the paper that introduced CLIP itself. And what the models did was black males were predicted at a much higher rate as criminals, almost close to 100%. Again, we looked at gender stereotypes and systemic racism and so on. Even we looked at the stats around, you know, drug abuse and so on. What you find from all that investigation is that black people are not much more criminal than the other ethnicities we looked at. However, the model prediction really puts black men at the highest probability for criminality. As I said, a lot of the claims we hear, whether they are coming from OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, Meta, you know, you name it, they are almost always extremely overhyped with very little substantial empirical evidence. To illustrate this, I'll just give you just a few examples. So this paper came out last year and it made a big splash. So DeepMind researchers and Google researchers claimed that using AI, they have discovered over 2.2 million new structures. This is in organic chemistry. And then actual, you know, organic chemists from UCL got together. They just thought, you know, this claim seems too good to be true. And most of the time we do hear claims that are too good to be true, that don't stand up to scrutiny. And unfortunately, the investigation task is often allocated to, researchers that don't have as much resources as those that are putting out these unsubstantiable claims. So what the researchers from UCL, after carefully examining that DeepMind's paper, is that they found scant evidence that fulfilled the criteria of novelty, credibility, and utility. So as you can see here, claims upon critical scrutiny around AI don't often stand up. Again, also, we hear claims such as, AI is autonomous, it can be applied here and there. But in reality, there is always people through and through. There is no such thing as, fully autonomous AI. We will always need people, humans in the loop. And a couple of notable examples that came out recently is this drive-through claiming to fully operate fully autonomous AI. But upon, again, investigation, they found out that it's actually gig workers that are doing the background work. Similar with Amazon's, it's called Just Walk Out. Take the idea, it's just like you can pick up your items from the supermarket and you just walk out and the AI is supposed to automatically just, estimate or understand or know what you have picked up and then charge you for that. But again, upon closer scrutiny, again, by investigative journalists, we saw that system, that Just Walk Out system that was supposed to be fully AI, had over 1,000 real people in India actually scanning the camera feeds to ensure accurate checkouts. Another thing, overhyped claim we hear around is about the capabilities of AI. The whole world is dominated with this idea that, AI learns, understands, reasons, and so on. But in reality, even the state-of-the-art generative models are just machines that kind of, extract patterns from the distribution of the training data. So I talked a lot about, overhypes, unsubstantiable claims, about, the fact that data sets and models encode and exacerbate negative stereotypes and so on. And the point I want to bring home is that all systems fail at one stage or another. Even, the so-called state-of-the-art AI models often fail, and we see it every now and again. And when they fail, the people, individuals, and communities that they fail are people at the bottom of society, people that are the least privileged. And you can see this in all kinds of, again, there has been robust body of research, especially over the past 5-7 years, whether it's in the welfare system, whether it's in education, whether it's in banking and in loaning, you will see that people that are, for example, refused mortgages are people that are, at the margins of society. With also education itself, you've heard about the UK AI grading algorithm that they tried to implement during COVID, and they discovered that instead of allocating grades in a fair way, the algorithm was, deciding what grade to allocate to which people. Based on area code as opposed to the merits of the students. So that was then scrapped. We've also seen a couple of years ago in the Netherlands where they tried to implement an AI system to check welfare frauds to help them as decide, who is deserving of a welfare claim and so on. And then they discovered that people, again, that really need social welfare help, that are at the very bottom of society, were being refused these two claims, leading to actual some days, and that algorithm was then thrown out. And even facial recognition systems that are increasingly being implemented in law enforcement systems, more particularly in the US. So far, we know 6 people have been gone to jail because of misidentification or because of failure of facial recognition systems. And all those people happened to be Black people, 5 Black men and 1 Black woman. The point I want to make with all this is that when AI systems fail, people at the margins of society suffer the most. This is a very recent research, actually, I encourage you to look at, where they looked at GPT and its ranking of employment or jobs by giving it a set of CVs. The model allocated, you know, certain jobs such as, you know, looking after children or homemaking to mostly women of Hispanic and Asian origin, whereas, you know, higher-end jobs such as software development was allocated at a much higher percent to demographics such as white men. So with all this example, again, what I want to say is, as these systems are becoming integrated into every part of society, from banking to education to security to everything, the benefits and harms are distributed unevenly. Those that are producing, those that are selling these models are gaining more power, getting richer, and the divides, the inequalities are getting farther and farther, while the people that are subjected to these models, sometimes without even our awareness, tend to be impacted the most. And unfortunately, not all the people that are impacted the most, not are they only left out of the conversation or of the research, but also legal policy processes tend to also disadvantage them. So here's an example from the recent AI Act, where you can see instances of that. For example, all biometric monitoring, except for, I'm sure there are a lot of people here that are much more experts in the legal aspects or in the AI Act than me. But according to my understanding is that, you know, biometric monitoring and surveillance has been banned except for, you know, exceptions for law enforcement and so on. And with the exception of, you know, using it on migrants, refugees, and so on. And again, what you can see here is that people that are migrating or seeking refugees are again considered as less of a human than the rest, even in the recent AI Act regulation. So I just want to point out the fact that a lot of what this kind of research is research that is really pushing for scientific rigor, research that is pushing for any claims to be grounded in, you know, actual evidence and so on. Unfortunately, with the current AI narrative, we hear a lot of like, are you a pessimist or an optimist around AI? So these kind of narratives are extremely unhelpful. So for example, when me and my colleagues do audits, we are not really opposing, you know, the development of AI. We are opposing the development of AI that is untested, that has failures, that is actually based on, you know, intuitions as opposed to, you know, scientific grounding. So we have numerous, you know, standards for, you know, for scientific processes, you know, standards including transparency, open sourcing, replicability, and so on, and accountability. So when it comes to AI, both data and models, all that is thrown out. We believe claims without actually, you know, asking all these critical questions. A lot of the AIs that are being integrated into our social systems, there's very little, you know, evaluation. These are not systems that are just being developed in the lab, that remain in the lab. These are systems that have actual impacts on people. So failing to ask critical questions is not really a pessimism, or is not being against innovation, but rather is an attempt to ground these systems to a higher scientific standard. So I will end with a bunch of recommendations. So a lot of the points a lot of the issues I pointed out are not something that we can just, you know, have a quick fix. We can have some, you know, a simple tweaking of the models and it's solved. No, unfortunately, a lot of these systems, these issues are systemic that require also an ecological change, a shift in thinking, actually that begins with removing this false dichotomy and with, you know, treating those that are asking critical questions as opposing innovation. So a lot of, again, these failures and various issues I pointed out, they are not just annoying obstacles that are getting in the way. These are fundamental flaws that we need to address. And as I said, there is no simple fix for all of this. But one thing we can do is that given that people at the margins of society tend to be impacted the most by these models, one thing we can do is active input and active participation in the ideation, in the development, and in the deployment of these, before the deployment of these models. Also, since we are thinking ecological systemic change, not just, a tiny technical fix, we also have to develop, especially within the scientific community, we have to develop incentive structures that reward, work that is, diagnosing these systems, work that is holding big corporations or people that are developing these models into accountable. So as I said, this is the paper I mentioned earlier. As you can see here, things such as performance, efficiency, novelty, and scaling up were the top desired values in machine learning. But we also looked at values such as privacy, fairness, justice, and so on. They were almost non-existent in those 100 most influential papers we looked at. And it's to some extent, it's not the fault of the individual authors, but rather the incentive structure of the publication system. For example, you are much more likely to get a funding or to get your paper accepted if you work on improving, state of the art by just, 0.01%, as opposed to if you are working on, questions such as fairness or equity and so on. So one thing is shifting the incentive structure to reward and to value this kind of work that is actually, examining values here at the bottom of the criteria. And again, we shouldn't be afraid to call out, corporations or companies that are developing and putting these systems out without proper testing, without proper audits and evaluation. So accountability, holding those accountable for their systems failures, is also something that is important. As you heard at the beginning, I also work at with the UN for the High-Level AI Advisory Board. And one of the things that has been really frustrating me is not just at the UN, but in general in the regulation space, there is an extreme influence or massive dominance of voices and representations from big tech. It's not that they shouldn't be at the table, but it should be clear that there is some conflict of interest because they are advising on a product that they themselves are developing and vending and selling. So yeah, we have to be mindful of issues like this. And finally, as a data auditor, one of the biggest bottlenecks we face is that we just don't have enough compute power. So again, it's not a recommendation for, rewarding each auditor with a certain amount of compute power, but rather a recommendation to think about, repositories or consortiums where independent auditors can't have the resources that they need to carry out the kind of work that is important to equity and accountability.
We have been listening to Dr. Abebe Berhane giving her keynote speech at the recent ADAPT Scientific Conference in DCU. Just after her talk, I caught up with Abebe again.
Abebe, that was absolutely amazing. You had the audience, the panel of your hands in there. I could see people shaking their heads and nodding their heads as you were showing all these images about AI and all these stats. Really, really shocking stuff in many ways. For the general public, what is the one thing you would really want people to be aware of based on your research?
Yeah, there are numerous things that people should be aware of. The first thing is a lot of claims around AI are made without, enough scientific evidence to back them up. So one thing I would advise the general public is any claim that sounds too big true is almost always not true. So take it with a big bucket of salt.
So a big bucket of salt.
Yes.
Thanks so much. Congratulations on a brilliant keynote.
Thank you.
And thanks to Abebe for allowing us to use the audio from her really engaging keynote. If you would like to find out more about the work she's doing, I have put some material into the show notes. But for now, from me, Dr. Claire O'Connell, Sloan, and thank you for listening to Adapt Radio.
The Adapt Radio podcast is brought to you by the Adapt Centre at Trinity College Dublin. Find out more about their extensive research work at adaptcentre.ie. Join us next time to hear about more groundbreaking innovations. To get new episodes automatically, just click the follow button on your player right now. The Adapt Radio podcast is produced by dustpod.io, with episodes monthly on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.